Can you tell us about those first few days when you were about to start on Harley Quinn?
Honestly, it kind of caught me by surprise.
That's Paul Mounts, Harvey Award-nominated colorist, a prince of paint, a titan of tint. Paul's been coloring comics for over 20 years now, which means you've definitely read at least 36 comics featuring his considerable talents. You've seen his work on The Ultimates, Before Watchmen Silk Spectre, definitely Fantastic Four, where Paul put in years of his life, having worked on over 130 issues featuring Marvel's First Family. Most recently, he's worked on Marvel's Black Panther series, those John Cassaday covers for Hellblazer over at DC, not to mention countless covers from all over the industry, including Image Comics, Aftershock, and Lion Forge's Catalyst Prime, to name just a small few. But it can be argued that Paul is most famous for his collaborations with artist Amanda Connor and their storied efforts behind the character Harley Quinn, which is why, you know, I was asking him about Harley just a minute ago. Harley Quinn is as world famous as she is, in part due to the hive mind of Amanda, Paul, and Jimmy Palmiotti. And I wanted to know what it felt like to look back on the formative days of such a popular series.
Jimmy and Amanda were going to start working on a book, and she said, hey, I've got some Harley Quinn pages I'm going to send you. And I've been working with Amanda for many, many years, and half the time I never know what the project I'm working on her with is going to be until she starts sending me pages. It was kind of out of the blue. Never saw the Harley Quinn freight train coming.
Ever since she first appeared as the Joker's main hench lady in her trademark jester jumper in Batman the Animated Series 25 years ago, Harley Quinn has seen various iterations of her character. There was the sexy nurse version from the Arkham Asylum video games, of course, how could we forget? And there's the Margot Robbie version from Suicide Squad, the movie, with her booty shorts and her blonde hair tipped in pink and blue. But perhaps most famous of all is the current version of Quinn as seen in her current DC Comics series, as conceptualized by Amanda and colored by Paul. And speaking of which, there is one person in particular who insists that Paul has already left his own stamp on the character's iconic legacy.
Amanda says I took to it pretty quickly, I guess, from what she says, and I don't really remember this, but she says I was the one who invented the alternating red and blue eyeshadow on Harley's eyes. I guess I have that. That's my Harley Quinn color legacy.
One thing about Paul's run on Harley Quinn that stood out to us here at Doom Rocket is the way Harley's skin tone has evolved over time, from a chilly chalk white complexion to her more natural rosiness. Is it just me, or does Harley have more of, if I could borrow from George Costanza here, a pinkish hue?
Yeah, Jimmy and I get in arguments about that sometimes because, to me, she's got white skin, but she still has blood vessels under the skin. That's just the technician in me. And it's like, you know, there's more blood vessels in the tip of the nose, there's more blood vessels in the cheeks,
yeah.
And, you know, so she's still going to have some color there, and I think it makes her look a little less corpse-like than mm-hmm. you just color her with whites and blues and things like that, so, but sometimes Jimmy says she gets a little sunburned looking, especially if I do it on her chest or something, so. Well, I like it. I think it makes her a little more human.
Of course, Harley Quinn is a famously nutty comic book, with a famously nutty lead. Just grab any issue off the shelf at random and you'll likely find yourself bombarded by some form of sequential insanity. Just imagine what that must be like for Paul. We had to ask him what the craziest page was for him to color, because how could we not? Here's Paul.
The first one that comes to mind, honestly, is something that I really related to, because it was in the Harley Quinn Little Black Book issue 1, where she's teaming up with Wonder Woman. One of the opening scenes shows her going into her bedroom, and her bedroom is basically just this shrine to Wonder Woman.
Yeah, I remember that. That was
which,
so cute.
Yeah, of course, reminded me of my wife is a huge Wonder Woman fan. That panel just reminded me of her bedroom when we met. So I actually got that page of original art from Amanda and gave it to her for her birthday 1 year. So.
Oh, that's amazing.
But there were so many little Wonder Woman details in that panel. I mean, I think that one panel took, I can't even imagine how long it took me to color that panel. As much as 2 pages of some other books, you know.
And on that tack, we had to ask how often a page on Harley Quinn evolves until Paul's completely happy with it. How often are there back and forths with Amanda before he finally sits down to work?
Before I get to work? Not too much. I mean, we've worked together long enough now that I pretty much know what she's thinking. If she's got specific directions on something, she'll, you know, generally shoot me a note ahead of time. But, the scripts are usually fairly descriptive, especially since she's part of the writing team, you know, mm-hmm. and I know what she's going for in the art. But we'll have conversations after it's colored, because she's very, very anal retentive. You know, it's like this pixel here needs to be a slighter, darker shade of blue or something, you know. And it's like, Amanda, that's never going to print. No one will ever see that. But yeah, she's into it anyway. But I mean, I like that. I like working with artists who care. You know, there's so many artists where it's just a paycheck. And that girl, she cares about every panel she draws, you know, and it shows.
And how did Paul Mounce celebrate Harley Quinn's 25th anniversary?
Colored the cover, colored the story for the 25th anniversary. Spent a week in New York for the convention.
Yeah.
Of course, that was more for my wife's 9th anniversary than the Harley Quinn, but we'll say it was for Harley Quinn, too.
Yeah.
Since DC Comics went and had a lovely celebration for Harley's 25th, we thought we'd do the same. That's right, Doomrock is putting old Harley Girl in the spotlight. This week, Harley Quinn. Then we'll share our top 5 most anticipated issues of the week, assess The Mighty Thor number 700 and Batman number 33, and read listener comments, which might mean you never know. It's Wednesday, October 18th. Happy New Comic Book Day. You're listening to Casual Wednesdays.
That's right, damn the torpedoes. We're going to talk about Harley Quinn.
I do love Harley so much.
I know you do. That's why it's going to be a fun episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hello, everyone. You're listening to Casual Wednesdays with Doom Rocket. I'm your host, Jared Jones. And with me, as always, is Daddy's Little Monster. I'm just kidding.
No.
I knew you
Not
weren't going to
that version
that.
Of Harley.
Not at all. But that is indeed MJ Kramer, Associate Editor here at Doom Rocket. Hello, MJ.
Hi, Jared Jones.
How are you?
Mr. J.
Mr. J. Yeah, well, that's. I don't know if that's very flattering.
I like saying it anyway. I think it's
cute. Yeah, well. So yes, this week we are celebrating Harley Quinn's 25th anniversary a little belatedly,
yeah,
perhaps.
It's okay.
But it's better late than never.
Yeah.
We're a bi-weekly podcast. The hell you want from us?
Yeah, it's like a month. Like a month late.
We definitely
a couple of weeks.
Could have done this the last episode instead of the Robin one.
We wanted to do Robin because of the A Lonely Place of Living.
Yeah.
So it makes sense.
Well, after I read that issue, Detective, I was like, we gotta talk about Robin. And now you wanna talk about Harley Quinn. I can't remember what precipitated us choosing this as an episode topic, actually. Do you?
Just like the anniversary and just... Because I had mentioned doing a Harley episode
mm-hmm.
when we were trying to think of, you know, the ideas for last week, but you really wanted to do Robin.
Yeah.
I'm stoked to talk about Harley. I have lots of Harley feelings.
I have no problems talking about Harley Quinn. I can hold a conversation about Harley Quinn, no problem.
She's an endearing character in many ways.
And an enduring character.
Yes. Even for only being around for only 25 years.
Only 25 years?
Less than, well, as far as comic book characters mm-hmm. go in the DC universe, where some of them are older than our grandparents' age.
Yeah, where's Loose Cannon now? You don't see him running around.
But DC put out a 25th anniversary special a couple weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
which was phenomenal.
Yeah, you loved it.
Yeah, been floored by like one of those anthology type issues in a long time. It was just so solid all the way through.
Yeah.
And it's just a testament to that character that she can be interpreted in a bunch of different ways, you know, to varying degrees of successfulness.
Definitely.
But all of the stories in that anniversary special were just so much fun.
I think what works for DC character in general is how malleable they can be, depending on which universe they end up popping up in. Like Elseworlds used to be this really big thing
mm-hmm.
with DC, and who knows, it could be again one day. Harley Quinn, I think, is a character that fits into pretty much any mold you would set her in because she's so distinctive unto herself.
Her, you know, original appearance back in the animated series, she was just Joker's Moll.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I remember was it The Laughing Fish? Was that the first episode she was in?
Yes.
Her first line was, "It is to laugh, huh, Mr. J?" I think I distinctly remember that.
It was super cute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But she had such a striking and memorable and just awesome design. Just her character design just stood out so well that, mm-hmm. you know, they kept on bringing the character back, even though she was just a little bit they threw in.
I remember when I was in high school, like early, like freshman or sophomore. Actually, I think it was my sophomore year. And my girlfriend at the time dressed up as Harley Quinn for Halloween.
She was way ahead of the trends.
She was. And she went all out, too. She got, like, the leotard. She stitched it all together. She had, like, the white motley on her. Yeah. Yeah, and, nice. And, like, the hat. Like, she went to town on this costume. She looked great.
Hi, B. How you doing?
Hey, B. I was a hastily assembled Joker. It was not pleasant. I have a photo of it. I'll show it to you
one
day.
I don't think I've seen this photo.
No one's seen this
photo.
Oh,
my God. Yeah. I can't wait.
It's the worst. Actually, I look like a really chubby Pugliacci. I was not having a good time.
But that's really cool you guys did that.
Yeah, we did that. But, I mean, I remember when DC was really trying to get Harley Quinn to be a part of the DCU outside of the animated series. And who knew that was actually going to work? And then it just started happening to all the characters. Like, Chuck Dixon and Graham Nolan did a lockup two-parter in Detective. They just started cherry-picking characters. But
And Livewire came over from the Superman animated series.
And stayed for a while, too. Like, I think Byrne did a couple issues on Action during... it was either John Byrne or Gail Simone working on Action Comics at the time. I don't remember. But yeah, Livewire made it. And this was all due to Harley Quinn. But you know who probably did it and made it work and stick beyond Paul Dini, who I think did the Harley Quinn one-shot, was Greg Rucka. Because this was all during the No Man's Land saga. Like, they used that crossover as the impetus to introduce Harley Quinn into the Bat mythos. And
she had appeared in the comics before that, but it wasn't like the continuity comics. It was in Batman Adventures number 12.
Yeah, that came out a year, I think, after she first appeared on the show. Like, not long after. Like, they quickly put her in the comic book tie-in.
Batman Adventures number 12 in September of 1993.
Very diligent. But, like, I think because her look was so iconic, thanks to Mr. Bruce Timm, of course, but, like, how do you get a clown to work twice in the DC universe? The Joker casts a long pull.
I think her voice, Arlene Sorkin, yes, doing that voice with that accent,
yeah,
it's just the cutest thing, but she's also very, you know, violent and dangerous, which is, it's just this really great combo.
You know, it's funny. Arlene Sorkin, to me, stands out for two reasons. One, obviously, for Harley Quinn, but the other is because she co-hosted America's Funniest People with Dave Coulier.
What?
Yeah, and I remember one time, and this was...
Cut it out.
Yeah, I think I was in fifth grade at the time, fourth grade, and I remember one time she made a joke and she said, and we'll be back in a couple of seconds. Can I say sex on TV? And they cut the commercial, and I turned to my mom and I went, what's sex? So because of Arlene Sorkin, I got the talk, and I don't think my mom was ready for it. So Harley Quinn pretty much got me educated. So
ushered in puberty for you?
Yeah, well, no. She just got me aware of what was immediately befall me. But yeah, so Harley Quinn became this fixture rather quickly, and she fit in really well. She got her own spinoff series that I think the Dodsons worked on, and yes, Carl Kiesel, I believe, was the writer on that. Yes. And I read a few issues on that. It was a little off the beaten path because they were trying to figure out how to make her fit. They didn't want her with the Joker too much. Because he had just killed Sarah Essen and they wanted to get rid of him for a little while.
Remember that when they used to just take the Joker out of Batman stories for a while?
They're kind of doing that right now a little bit, I guess. They got this three Joker thing that I guess they're going to sit on until after Doomsday Clock. I don't know what they're doing. With Harley Quinn in her own book, I think they killed her off for a second.
And then she came back.
Yeah, and that was peculiar. So I'm not sure what the whole point of that was.
Ivy kind of gave her powers too.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And that's actually from the animated series too, because I remember that amazing Harley and Ivy episode. The first time where they team up and like they're hiding out in this toxic waste dump that used to be like suburbia. And she has to inoculate Harley. And here's an image in a children's show.
The dynamic between Harley and Poison Ivy is one of my favorites in comics because I don't ever really want to see her with the Joker anymore. It's really weird seeing kind of glorified in the Suicide Squad movie, but their relationship is abusive and awful. And the fact that in the comics, Harley has moved past it. She's in her weird little poly relationship with Ivy.
Yeah.
Where they're just like seeing other people, but together. It's super cute. The two of them together is better than Harley and Joker could ever be. I mean, it's weird because they, like, you see it like Hot Topic, like, I don't want to be Romeo and Juliet, I want to be the Joker and Harley.
Oh, barf.
Yeah, it's really gross and really creepy, and it's not something that should be
glorified for the young viewers and or readers.
I think that's just the way DC markets, though. I think that they hang on to, like, the strongest, most recognizable facets to a character and then just,
it's
like,
beat definitely your head over registered it with people.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
Well, I mean, Mad Love was such a huge book. There was a lot of themes attached to it that you probably wouldn't be able to get away with on the animated series.
Oh, so one Eisner's and Harvey's, too.
Yeah, I mean, it did more for the character than the show was doing at that point.
And it could. I mean, you know, it could go to those places because it was a comic and it wasn't one of the kid comics.
I'm surprised DC published it, to tell you the truth, considering what they were trying to do with the character. But, I mean, would Harley Quinn be in the same place she is today were it not for that book? I don't think so.
Oh, definitely not.
But the thing about Mad Love, it creates this Mobius strip for Harley and the Joker, how they're always fated to be together in this cycle of violence. And that's kind of like where the story ends with us. It's like they leave Harley off going, never dealing with this guy again. The Joker threw her out of a window. And then she looks over to her nightstand and Joker had bribed a guard to sneak a flower into her cell, and she calls him, like, she says, it felt like a kiss. He's like, how does it feel, Harley? He's like, yeah, it felt like a kiss. When people, like the Hot Topic crew, tend to romanticize Harley and the Joker, I think that's the story that most of these people are stemming from.
I think they're stemming from the movie.
What, Suicide Squad?
Yeah.
It just came out.
Yeah.
It feels like it just came out.
Well, all this explosion of merch and Joker and Harley stuff has happened since that movie. I guess. It's... That plays a big part of it. But as far as that whole, like, cycle of abuse narrative, I think that having Amanda Connor as a woman, being a co-writer on the book, having a lady co-write that book, it gives a really a good perspective. And I think the fact that they have made her break that cycle, I'm sure that has a lot to do with Amanda being on the book.
This is a legendary run.
Yeah.
Her and Palmiotti. I mean, Harley Quinn sells as good as any other DC book, if not better in some respects. I mean, Harley Quinn is as iconic now on comic book stands as Superman, as Batman, as Wonder Woman. I think Harley has surpassed the Joker in a couple of respects.
Just as far as pop culture goes, yeah. I mean, if you go to any comic book convention, you will see so many different Harleys. Your mind will be boggled.
And this is going back to what we were saying earlier about how, like, the character is so malleable. I mean,
and also as far as animated versions of the character, Harley's already got some real good stuff.
She's got great stuff. Yeah. Man, holy crap.
Started off there, you know?
Even Tara Strong, when she took over for Harley and Sork, for, I think the first game she took over for her was Arkham City. I think Tara Strong did a very good job channeling Arlene Sorkin's performance and making it her own. But that was when I learned that Harley Quinn could change, could really adapt. It was when one character, actor, could take over from another and make it their own. Just as good. Not better, but just as good. It was like that time when...
Still very similar, though.
Yeah, it's like when people argue about who's your favorite Batman, Keaton or Bale. That's a hell of a conversation.
But then a lot of people will say Kevin Conroy.
Well, of course. Exactly. But there's so many options to choose from. Then people have their favorites. Some people will say Adam West.
Yeah.
And now with Harley Quinn, people have... It's like, do you like Margot Robbie? Do you like Arlene Sorkin? Do you like Tara Strong? It's like... And it's only going to get more crazy as the years go on.
As much as Suicide Squad was not a movie I dug, I really liked Margot Robbie in it.
Yes.
And I think she was flawless casting.
Her and Gal Gadot are the only two reasons why I want any more of these, like, in continuity DC movies. They're the only two parts of it that work.
I think it's cool that the DCU is doing okay with its lady characters.
They're doing great.
Yeah. And it shows, because I work at a comic shop. There are lots of ladies who come in specifically to buy Harley Quinn comics.
That's something.
There are lots of little girls who come in and we'll see the toy case and we'll see Harley Quinn and get really excited. That and also, of course, the DC Superhero Girls line.
Yeah.
Little girls love Harley Quinn. And I hope that the movies will start steering her away from being in this awful abusive relationship with the Joker, because I really don't like little girls hanging up on that.
Yeah.
I want more of the positive portrayals and, like, DC Superhero Girls and that sort of thing. And it's kind of funny, they sort of have, like, two different Harleys right now, because they've got the Jimmy and Amanda Harley Quinn in her own ongoing, and then they also have the Harley that's in Suicide Squad.
Yeah, they're not the same character.
It's almost like separate continuity, but not, it's just like the wibbly wobbly rebirth thing.
Well, let's talk about this really quick then. Which creators would you like to see handle Harley Quinn in some capacity. Well, of course, Paul Dini, but let's talk about continuity books.
I think Jodie Houser would write a really, really fun Harley.
Oh, yeah? In continuity or kind of wackadoodle like what we got in...
I think she could do either one, because she's shown in Mother Panic that she can really go dark.
Mm-hmm.
But like with a book like Faith, she can do fun, sweet, silly really easily.
Yeah, Jodie Houser would rock a Harley Quinn book now that I'm thinking about it.
Great.
Yeah.
I think she'd be great.
Holy mackerel.
Throw Joelle Jones on there on the art. Kick some butt. Are you
breaking my brain?
Yeah.
Jodie Houser and Joelle Jones on a Harley Quinn book? Did we just do DC's job for them?
Yes.
I think
yes.
we did.
I want this book now.
Oh my God, so do I. All right. MJ, we're going long. We got to move on to the top five. Are you ready for it?
Yes.
All right. Well, then that's what we got to do. Good talk about Harley Quinn. But for now, we got to do what we do every single episode, and that is to share our top five most anticipated issues of the week.
I'm going to go first.
Let's go first.
All right. Well, my first pick for this week is Maestro's Number One by writer-artist Steve Scroce. Steve Scroce?
I think it's Scroce.
Scroce?
Scroce, that doesn't fly off the tongue.
Colors by Dave Stewart. Letters by Phonographics. This is a really, really gorgeous-looking book. It's more fantasy. We've seen a flood of fantasy stuff coming out from Image lately.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Scroce's art makes this a little bit more noticeable than other things he's done. Storyboards for The Matrix. He's worked on tons and tons of stuff.
We Stand on Guard.
We Stand on Guard, yes, of course.
The cover caught my eye. Yeah. Is he trying to channel Neil Gaiman with that guy? What's going on there?
Yeah, they're doing the cover. Looks a little Neil Gaiman-ish. A
little Gaiman, Keanu Reeves thing going on.
Yeah, like yeah, a little baby. Mix of the two.
It'd be a handsome baby.
All right, what is your first book of the week?
My first pick this week is Sherlock Frankenstein and the Legion of Evil. It's a Black Hammer spinoff, the first of its kind, although standalone Black Hammer stories are nothing new. We got the annual last year, if I'm not mistaken. And this one, written by Jeff Lemire, we got David Rubin on the art this time, though. And David Rubin, you want to talk about beautiful art. Rubin, look at this panel. This is like
super pretty.
What Lemire's been doing with the superhero concept and like subverting it to fit into this like Watchmen-esque narrative, and the stuff he's been doing with the grit.
Throwing in so much Kirby.
So much Kirby, but like he's been dabbling in the murky gray area of the superhero archetype, and now we get to see what he does with the villains. This is the kind of anti-Black Hammer book that I wanted from the writer of Black Hammer. So my first pick this week, definitely Sherlock Frankenstein and the Legion of Evil, number one. MJ, what's next for you?
Well, my next one, going over to Marvel for Spider-Gwen number 25. We first saw Gwenom.
Gwenom.
Yes, it's Gwenom, which is this Earth's version of, you know, the Venom symbiote. We first saw it in the last couple issues, but this is the first part of her being Gwenom, the first part of the story where she's going to be Gwenom. It's going to be called Gwenom.
Gwenom.
And it's gotten a lot of hype on the internet.
And why?
Because a lot of people like Venom, and the costume design is real, real cool.
Yeah, that's pretty.
It's got dope. Got like the sort of Venom teeth coming off her her hood.
So is like her hood the mouth, and her face the tongue?
No, I don't know. It just looks cool. That's the main thing. It looks real cool.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really looking forward to seeing how she is going to be able to use the symbiote to her advantage.
Okay.
Now that because this gives her powers back, pretty much. She didn't have them before. She was using these little sort of shots to give them to herself. But now this gives her powers back. But she's also
Gwenom.
Yep. So I'm excited. It's the first part of the story. Super stoked. What's your next issue for the week, Jared?
My next pick is Superman number 33. I haven't had a Superman book as my pick in at least two episodes.
You liar.
I reviewed a Superman book, I think.
That still counts.
I don't know. I don't keep track anymore. we've done so many of these episodes. But Superman number 33, I'm picking primarily because the concept alone is seems pretty awesome to me. It's called Imperius Lex. And it's a story about how Luthor is summoned back to Apocalypse because they want him to rule it because Darkseid's gone.
So it's not a crossover with Namor?
No, unfortunately. Yeah, DC and Marvel aren't crossing over. That's just never gonna happen again.
Well, I was hoping against hope.
Yeah, a Namor and Luthor book would be awesome. I'm thinking about it. But so we still got like metal suited Luthor, so he's got his superpowers. Mm-hmm. I can't remember whether or not that gear is got apocalyptian technology. It probably does. It has to in some capacity. I'm sure he at least has a mother box stowed away in some capacity. But he's going there to maybe rule Apocalypse. Who knows? And he's dragging Superman along for the ride. Right now on the cover, we've got Steppenwolf, who's the big baddie of the Justice League movie, hoisting Jonathan Kent up in the air. And I want to know what that's all about. So definitely piqued my interest. Superman number 33, my second pick this week. What's next for you, MJ?
All right. My third pick this week is Now number 1.
You got to describe what's going on with Now, because you posted this on Facebook and Twitter tonight, and so did I, and a lot of people have a lot of questions about it.
Okay. This is a new anthology series that Fantagraphics is putting out. They're going to be trying to do it 3 times a year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like 128 pages. Mm. It's got a thick spine. This is like magazine size. This is like a really good magazine size thing. It's full color on the inside. And it has a really awesome lineup of all of the best cartoonists around.
Oh, okay.
But we've got Sarah Corbett, Tobias Shulkin, Eleanor Davis, Dash Shaw, Gabriel Bell, J.C. Menu, Noah Van Sciver, Tommy Parrish, Kayla Graham, Daria Tesler, Conchita Herrero, Malachi Ward, Matt Sheehan, Antoine Cossey, Sammy Harkim, and Nick Thornburn. That's with a cover by Rebecca Morgan.
That is a lot.
It's a collection. There's like strips in here. There's, you know, more loose stuff. I'm really excited to dive into this.
I'm excited to keep it on the coffee table.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
And it's great that Fanta's going to be putting this out 3 times a month. It's $10. It's a lot of stuff. A lot of really cool stuff.
I'm sure they got plenty of strips in the backlog in their catacombs.
Yeah.
Those people know what they're doing.
Yeah. This is a new awesome thing. Very excited.
Very cool.
What's your next pick for the week, Jared?
Well, my next pick is a collection, too. Not an anthology, but a collection, an omnibus. This is the second episode in a row where I've picked an omnibus that is way too expensive. This one's $100. It's the Grayson Super Spy Omnibus. They finally collected Grayson into one collected hardbound. Christmas coming, MJ.
You have all of those issues.
I have all those single issues. I have the floppy issues. You're right. Uh-huh. But I don't have an omnibus to put on our shelves. Anyway, it collects all the issues of Grayson. Its entire run. It does include the Grayson Futures End one-shot.
You did not like that.
Which I really didn't like, because it showed Dick Grayson killing somebody. Even though he had a choice not to do it. He did it anyway.
It was an awful dystopian future.
I think Tom King overreached.
Mm.
He wrote that single issue. Mm-hmm. I had a real big problem with it. I remember. What? Grayson was one of my favorite DCU books. Did it count as a DCU book?
Yeah, it was.
The DCYOU initiative. That had a lot of good stuff going for it.
Yeah.
Died unceremoniously. Deserved a better death.
It was kind of dead on arrival. It mm-hmm. didn't come out in the right way. It wasn't given enough push.
Yeah.
And
it should have been what the New 52 was.
Yeah. And yeah. People had lost so much faith in the publisher in general at that point that no one wanted to see what they were doing.
Like, we had Martian Manhunter, Prez, Black Canary.
Yeah,
that was a good book. But Grayson, as far as this guy was concerned, cream of the crop. Tom King, Tim Seeley. Sorry?
We Are Robin, too.
Robin, too. Yeah, that book was great, too.
Yeah.
DCU was... We gotta do a DCU episode.
We should.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah.
But yeah, as it stands right now, the Grayson Super Spy Omnibus is my pick this week, and hopefully my Christmas present this year. Anyway.
We'll see.
MJ.
Okay, we'll talk to Santa.
What's next for you?
Okay, my fourth pick for the week is T-Dragon Society hardcover. It's by Katie O'Neill, writer-artist.
Mm-hmm.
She did that little book that was called Princess, Princess Ever After.
Yeah.
That was super adorable.
I remember you talking about that.
Yes, yes. And this was originally a webcomic that she did about this main character who discovers these tea dragons and how to raise them.
What are tea dragons?
Little dragons with tea. And look it up. You can take a look at some of the pages online before you get the hardcover.
Mm-hmm.
Her art is adorable. And this is kids friendly, but also something that I want to read as well.
Fair enough.
So it is, you know, The Definition of All Ages. I'm really stoked to see it. It's out by Oni Press this week.
So. Oh, okay. Yeah, I knew I saw that somewhere.
Yeah. Huh. All right. What is your next pick of the week?
My next pick is the book that I'm reviewing this week.
No.
But I wanted to talk about it now because there's one final book that I really want to talk about. In the meantime, we've got Batman number 33.
Batman.
I got a lot of DC coming out this week. Forgive me. There are a couple reasons why I'm really into this book.
This is a big deal.
This is a big fucking deal, this issue, this arc. It's called The Rules of Engagement. It takes place directly after the finale of Wars of Jokes and Riddles. Cat's out of the bag, quite literally. Bruce Wayne and Selina Kyle are getting hitched. This deals immediately afterwards. So Batman finally got done telling his long-ass story, post-coitus. If you want to marry me, this is like this one time I did this thing. Is that cool? Can we? All right, we're good. So now they're in the desert.
Selena's like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, she's like, whatever. But what makes this book so important is that it features the art of none other than Joelle Jones.
And Jordy Belair.
This is the second time.
Only the second.
Only the second time a woman has ever worked on the Batman title. First with being Becky Cloonan. Now, Joelle Jones is one of our favorite artists. Period. So the fact that she is working on one of the most, if not the highest profile book in comics right now.
Definitely the highest.
Bravo to DC Comics for making this happen. Joelle Jones is on Batman. I can't be happier. MJ, what's next for you?
I thought about putting that on mine too, just for that
it's a good
momentous occasion of having another lady drawing the Batman ongoing.
There's a lot of books this week.
Yeah, that's just really exciting. Also, I thought you'd get a kick out of the fact that that cover has Batman in his like desert gear from Batman v Superman. He's wearing goggles and I
can't stand it, but that's fine. It's fine. Everything's fine. What do you got? What's the last pick for you this week, MJ?
Well, my last pick is also the one that I am reviewing.
Oh, okay.
I've been really looking forward to this a lot. It is The Mighty Thor number 700.
I know.
Oversized comic.
Yeah.
With lots of different awesome artists in it. This is the start of the Death of the Mighty Thor storyline.
Here we go. We knew this was coming.
Yeah. It's got a gazillion really awesome artists in here. The aforementioned amazing Becky Cloonan has four pages in it.
Oh, is that so?
Yes. Mr. Russell Dowderman, the, you know, regular artist. I should probably stop talking because I'm going to be talking about this issue a bunch more.
I know exactly what
Jared does his last one. So I was going to say that it's really cool and I'll tell you more about it.
Very cool. Well, I won't take up too much more of your or our listeners' time and I'll just get right into the last pick I had this week. Oh, MJ, I've been waiting to talk about this one.
Which
for
one could time. This be?
It is none other than Kid Lobotomy, number one, from the all-new imprint of IDW Publishing, Black Crown. Run by Shelley Bond, this book, written by Peter Milligan, art by Tess Fowler, colors by Lee Luffridge, and then, of course, letters by Aditya Bidikar.
Aditya Bidikar. I've seen that name before.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, he did all the lettering for Femme Magnifique. I've been wanting to talk about this book for so long. I've been so pumped about it. We've been running an interview series with Shelley Bond about Black Crown on Doom Rocket. We're posting the final chapter of it today, in fact. My review for Kid Lobotomy number one will be out tomorrow, Thursday, on DoomRocket.com. So make sure you check that out. But in the meantime, get your beautiful asses to your nearest LCS and pick up Kid Lobotomy number one. Get the Frank Quitely cover, or get the Tess Fowler cover, or get both. It doesn't matter. Nothing matters. All that matters is you read this book. And if you happen...
Jared's more excited about what you read on the back cover.
If you happen to look at the back cover, our friends at IDW saw fit to put a Doom Rocket pull quote on the back of their book. So gee, thanks a whole bunch to our pals at IDW. We really appreciate it. One that closes out our top five most anticipated issues of the week. Now comes time for us to assess our...
The Mighty Thor, number 700.
Yeah, lay it on me. Give me the elevator pitch.
All right. It's the 700th issue of Thor. Marvel threw a party, and my favorite writer and almost all my favorite artists were invited.
Mm-hmm. This is like practically a rhetorical question. Why did you decide to read this book?
Yeah, because you got to ask it.
Got to ask it.
Come on. Not only is it my favorite superhero ongoing comic, it is the cumulatively 700th issue of it. Do you think I could somehow possibly miss this momentous epic occasion?
Also a rhetorical question, I presume.
Yes.
Do we need to reassess our assessment module? Like, this isn't working right now. What did you love about it? I already know all the answers.
Well, let me start.
All right.
Everything.
Okay.
from Dowderman and Wilson's first double-page spread on the third and fourth pages, with the Norns twining around the bottom borders of the page, the threads of the Fates swirling across panels, you already know that everyone's already A-game has been dialed up a notch. Each artist, and there are 14 sequential titans on this issue, counting as one damn well should, the colorists, takes a different time period and or character or incarnation of characters. They have a varying amount of pages. Simonson and Wilson, Thelmondo and Coypel only have one. McLean Stewart and Das Pastoris only have two each. Russell Dowderman and Matt Wilson tell the current exploits of the Odinson and the Norns. I got a giggle out of Matt Wilson coloring a different set of Norns than the usual over in that little Wickdiff comic. And Daniel Acuna tells Thor's and Jane's parallel goings-on. James Herron and Dave Stewart are on Volstagg's War Thor, and his kinetic style fits the Asgardians perfectly. The issue ends with his art on a familiar face as well, so fingers crossed we'll see more of him. Hopefully doing more of that character. You'll have to read to find out who. Becky Cloonan and Dave Stewart are only on four pages, but it's teenage trash Thor as only Becky Cloonan can do, and it's wondrous.
Sure.
I pray the gods nightly for more interiors from her, and this is a little bit, it'll do for now. Das Pastoris briefly visits the far future King Thor and his amazing daughters Elisiv, Frigg, and Atli. Chris Burnham and Ivis Forshina give us four pages of a cosmic ruckus between Black Galactus, the Butcher of Worlds, and Eagle, the Living Planet. Andrew McLean and Dave Stewart have a couple pages focused on Loki and his pops Laufey. McLean's Stark style very much suits the snowy wastes of Jotunheim, and he's looking great with those Dave Stewart colors.
I'm sure.
Jill Thompson has a few gorgeously cut watercolor pages.
Hey, what?
Featuring Frog Thor, who ends up playing an important role in the end of the issue.
Oh, wow.
Mike Del Mundo's Malekith page and Coypel's Hela and Thanos page are also both lovely. The issue bops flawlessly from storyline and artist to back again, but it's hard not to stop and marvel at the artwork, and that is not hyperbole. Jason Aaron keeps attention mounting through all 50 pages, even when the tone jumps from playful teen Thor to grave King Thor to batshit cosmic battling back to the War for the Realms. That feels like it has all the stakes possible now, and somehow they still keep adding more.
Is there anything you didn't like?
Only that a few of these big names only had a page to flex those drawn muscles. But maybe that's all they had time for, who knows.
Or space, for that matter.
And it also might be a little confusing for a new reader to pick up, maybe? A little bit. But with the sort of celebration, I'd rather they reward the longtime reader, to be honest.
Who would you recommend this book to and why?
Everyone ever. Especially with a new Thor movie coming out, and with a roster like this, everyone needs to see it.
And what did you give The Mighty Thor, number 700?
10 out of 10 out of 10.
Wow.
All right, Jared.
Yes?
What book are you reviewing this week?
Batman number 33, and you knew that.
Well, what is your elevator pitch?
All right. Damn the spoilers, alert the watchtower, and batten down the hatches. Batman and Catwoman are getting hitched. But first, they have to travel to the forgotten deserts of Kondok for a meeting I don't think anyone saw coming.
Why did you decide to read this book?
I kind of got into it already, but after the pretty damn good War of Jokes and Riddles, I was getting anxious for a present-day Batman story that dealt directly with Bruce Wayne's latest disastrous life-altering decision. But the real reason I was pumped about this book was because it featured the art of Joelle Jones of Mockingbird and Ladykiller fame, and Jones, she did not disappoint.
What did you love about it?
Every single page of it. From the minimalistic pace of Batman and Catwoman's sojourn through the desert, to the Wayne Manor interludes featuring every in-dimensional Robin or Robin type receiving the big news from Alfred himself, and how both sequences tied together into one staggering reveal. Batman number 33 might be the best issue of Batman Tom King has written yet.
Really?
Yes.
Even better than the Mitch Jarrett's ones?
Yes.
Okay.
This whole assessment part of this episode is a little hyperbolic, so if you'll pardon my hyperbole, what shoves this issue into the annals of legend is the artwork by Joelle Jones. I can't say that enough. Jones is the second woman to ever draw the main Batman title, though one quick scan through her pages, with all the thoughtfulness and attention to minute detail, it would make you wonder how she hasn't already been on the book for years. Her facial expressions on the Robin's faces, once Alfred breaks the news, are at once hilarious and touching. And each expression is distinctive and belongs to its respective character. Jason Todd is stupefied. He's got this really dumb look on his face. Dick isn't sure what he just heard, and he's not sure if he should be laughing. Duke is genuinely surprised because who the hell wouldn't be? And Damien is, as you can imagine, furious, which makes the moment all the more impactful. The rules of engagement, as this arc is being called, is shaping up to be a huge Bat Family saga. But before I get done talking about the things I loved, Jordi Belair's colors are amazing. There's this two-page spread, which feels like there's nothing in it were it not for Belair's colors. She makes the sun on the desert sands.
No, Jordi is amazing.
Yeah.
She won that Eisner for a reason.
I'm aware.
Heck yeah. Was there anything you didn't like?
That it ended? That I have to wait a measly 2 weeks for the next issue? What do you want from me?
Who would you recommend this book to and why?
Everyone. Just like you. Even if some people don't even like Batman, and they exist, there's no downplaying how strong this issue is. It feels like a page has turned in the Batman mythos, that a legend is furthering. And for those of you out there keeping score, that is precisely how Rebirth should function. I'm actually really mad about this. This didn't come out last week, so I had to do a Rebirth and review. Ended up not being able to do it because of scheduling, but like I would have made time for this.
Yeah,
I'm really upset.
What is your score for Batman number 33?
MJ, this is the first time, this is a casual Wednesday's first, we both gave a book a 10 out of 10. Ah. Every week we take to social media to ask you, our listeners, the pressing questions on our minds. And this week's question, in comics, video games, film, or television, what is your favorite Harley Quinn moment? We asked, and you answered. MJ, take it away.
All right, well, our first reply is from Rye and Fanzen on Facebook. He said, easily the episode where she teams up with Batman and Robin in the earlier days of the animated series. She was my third favorite femme fatale in that series after Catwoman and Phantasm. She really helped forge my love of complex female antiheroes in that episode.
Andrew Elia over on Facebook, hello Andrew, said, I like when she works with the heroes. I liked her in Injustice with Green Arrow. I liked her in JLA versus Suicide Squad miniseries. She's best in the Batman animated series, of course. She was also portrayed well in the Batman Arkham games.
My friend Paul Story replied and said, maybe this one, but I'm hugely biased. And it's a panel from his Gotham Girls miniseries, which nowadays is all those early Harley Quinn appearances are worth lots of money now.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
But it's a panel where it's Harley and she's real mad. She's like, hey, I was a psychologist, you know, I ain't stupid. So it's very cute.
We're over on Twitter. Alex Chung retweeted Doom Rocket's question and said, mad love, both the comic book and the cartoon version.
Heck yeah. And Andrew Farrago said, am I a total jerk if I say it's this? And he posted The Art of Harley Quinn.
That's a book that Andrew wrote.
Yes.
Hopefully I get to interview him on that one. Hey, Andrew, what's up? Back over on Facebook, Max Henskin? I don't know if I'm saying that right. Sorry, Max. But he also said, the Injustice comic series by Tom Taylor is a hell of a lot better than one would expect a tie-in comic to be. Harley's got some shining moments in that series. And he also posted a page. And this one is the one where it looks like she ripped off the head of Lobo.
Whoa.
I'm behind on Injustice. That looks pretty intense, but
I have heard that her characterization in Injustice has been really, really good.
I also hear these things. Yeah. MJ, do you have a favorite Harley Quinn moment?
It's stupid to pick something so recent, but I really, really loved that anniversary special. And the one that was penned by Paul Dini was great. It was definitely like animated series set.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, no, it was great. And it was Harley's birthday. And she was real sad because they weren't doing anything for her birthday. Joker wasn't celebrating her birthday.
Oh.
And then all of a sudden he calls her to go over to do some work at the dock or something. And it's a birthday party. But it turns out at the very end that Ivy had poisoned Joker and told him that the only way he'd get the antidote is if he threw a big surprise party for her.
Oh, Ivy.
It was the cutest thing. In the very end, he's like, give me that antidote now or throw your stupid party. Mm. It was great. I love Harley and I love Ivy.
I know you do.
What is your favorite Harley moment?
I'm going to go all the way back to the animated series, and it's the Harley and Ivy episode, which might be one of my favorite episodes of the show, period. And they're in the car, and they're idling. And it's one of those quiet moments in the animated series. I always love their quiet moments where there's no music. And these boys pull up, and they're catcalling them.
Well, hello.
I think I'm in love.
Auga, auga.
Excuse me, boys. Didn't your mommies tell you that's not the nice way to get a lady's attention?
Oh, and what are you gonna do? Spank us?
That's right, pigs. And here's the paddle.
That's a great episode.
I think that's what everyone would like to do to catcallers. I actually thought of a different moment.
Oh, go for it.
It was during Paul Dini's detective run. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
That first issue when Harley came back. I think Don Kramer did the art for it.
He had to have.
Yeah. It was so super cute. And she just kind of does her anti-hero thing and like helps out the side of the Angels. And Bruce Wayne decides to support her parole.
That reminds me of the episode of Harley's Holiday. And all she wanted was that little pink dress, and it started like this comedy of errors.
Yes.
And but like at the end, like they take her back to Arkham because obviously there's still some work to be done. And mm-hmm. Batman comes in and he goes, "Here, sorry, I had a bad day once." And she's like, "You're not a bad fella." And she gives him a kiss. Harley Quinn's a great character.
I like Harley so much. Good.
That's it. That's all the time we have for this installment of Casual Wednesdays. Need more of this sweepy little podcast in your life? Check out our 39-episode archive over on iTunes. Rate and subscribe. Tell us how we're doing. Or search Casual Wednesdays over at DoomRocket.com. Special thanks to Paul Mounts for taking the time to talk with us. Check out Harley Quinn, available in all stores, all discerning comic book stores.
I think issue number 30 is out this week?
I believe that's the case.
Yeah.
And look us up on Twitter. I'm at @JarrettJones_MJ. Where can they find you?
@MollyJane_K.
Thank you.
Welcome.
And that's it. So until the day that DC finally retires Joker and puts that old clown to pasture, I remain Jarrett. That's MJ over there. And from all of us here at DoomRocket.com, have a great new comic book.